All right, good afternoon, everybody. It's good to see everybody. This is Thursday, July 9th, 2020. This is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Good afternoon, Carla. Can you please call the roll?
Good afternoon, Mayor. Hardesty?
Here.
Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference. The City has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast to this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the City's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and Channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your flexibility, your patience, and your understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to conduct the city's business. And with that, we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon. Hey, Lauren.
Good afternoon. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or first readings of ordinances, the published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you're a lobbyist. If you're representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected for the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
All right, good, thank you. So we have three items before us today, and the first item is item 551. Carla, can you please read the item?
Amend the comprehensive plan map, zoning map, and Title 33, planning and zoning, to revise the single dwelling residential designations and base zones.
Very good. Colleagues, today we continue our work on the residential infill project. Before we begin our substantive discussion on RIP, we have our usual disclosures. I don't own any property in any residential zone that could be impacted by the residential infill project. I am a renter. However, out of an abundance of caution, I'm disclosing this as a potential conflict of interest. Anybody else?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I also don't own any property that would be impacted by our decisions on the RIP. Don't anticipate owning any, but due to caution, I'm also declaring that I don't have a conflict of interest.
That's good enough. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. I own property in the city of Portland. I will neither be benefited nor harmed any more than anybody else by this measure, and therefore I do not have a conflict of interest.
Thank you. Commissioner Udaly, anything from you?
I am also a renter, do not own any real estate, and do not have any real or perceived conflicts of interest.
All right, great. Thank you. We're here today to consider and take action whether to approve or reject proposed amendments. We've spent considerable time listening and discussing amendments to this proposal. We've heard public testimony in January. We held two work sessions to more fully develop amendments to the proposed draft of the residential infill project based on that testimony. And we, of course, heard additional public testimony on amendments last month. We used the MAP app in an effort to make it easier for people to read and submit comments. We closed the opportunity just over 2 weeks ago on June 18th. I continue to be very impressed by the thoughtful and constructive engagement of so many of you in the community on this very important ordinance, and I thank you for that. We understand and appreciate how many of you have been following this work for several years after an impressive amount of work and coordination from staff from several bureaus and our city attorneys. We're almost at the finish line. I just want to reiterate my thanks for all who've made this a much stronger proposal as a result of your input and your testimony. I'll now turn it over to Bureau of Planning and Sustainability Director Andrea Durbin to walk us through the agenda this afternoon. Good afternoon, Director Durbin. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Good afternoon, members of the council. Thank you. As Mayor, you just noted, we presented the Planning and Sustainability Commission's recommended draft to you at the beginning of the year and heard strong community support for many of the policies advanced by this project. We also have heard concerns about density and growth from some Portland residents. The residential infill project will increase access to multiple types of housing in all Portland neighborhoods by allowing more units at lower prices on each lot, while also reducing the overall allowed size of buildings in these neighborhoods. The proposal is essential to reach our city goals for compact development and more housing choices, including smaller but still family-sized units in more neighborhoods. It will also help create more inclusive neighborhoods, beginning to correct some of the harms incurred from the exclusionary nature of single-family zoning. Today, staff will summarize the 6 packages of amendments for your consideration. Council will then discuss and deliberate on the amendments before taking a vote on each amendment to determine which have the council's support to include in the final as amended draft. Staff will return to council on August 5th for your final consideration of the complete package. And if there are no questions about the process, I'd like to invite Morgan Tracy from BPS to present the summary of the amendments.
Great, thank you. Any questions at this point, anybody? I'm not seeing anybody. All right, good afternoon, Morgan.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and members of council. Are you seeing my screen?
Well, we see you. There it is. Yep, started sharing. There we go.
I almost got that perfected, getting closer. So I'm Morgan Tracy, the project manager for the residential infill project. Also with me today is Joe Zender, chief planner, and Sandra Wood, supervising planner. Today, before you discuss and deliberate on the amendments that are on the table, I want to provide a quick overview to remind those watching the hearing of the subject matter in each of these 6 amendment packages. The documents that comprise the project record are available on the project website at www.portland.gov/BPS/RIP. There are many benefits to the residential infill project. It opens up our single-family neighborhoods to people of more modest means and gives them a chance to live in our vibrant and accessible neighborhoods closer to transit, jobs, grocery stores, and healthcare. It allows for more housing at lower prices on each lot, while applying new limits on building scale and height to improve compatibility. And it is also an important tool to help reduce displacement. The amendments for your consideration today are the result of public hearings held on January 15th and 16th, and work sessions held on January 29th and February 12th. These specific amendments were then the subject of additional public hearings on June 3rd and the 18th. Recent public testimony largely centered around amendments number 6, the deeper affordability bonus, and number 7, the historic resource demolition disincentive. Many of those who testified in support of Amendment 6 opposed Amendment 7, citing concerns of limiting housing options. Conversely, many who support Amendment 7 were not supportive of Amendment 6 based on concerns related to compatibility and other localized impacts. Amendment number 1 is a set of technical amendments necessary to address changes to the code package since the Planning Commission's vote. They align the code updates to reflect changes adopted by Better Housing by Design, align the proposed visibility standards to match the multi-dwelling zones, update the map changes to reflect zoning changes completed as part of the 82nd Avenue project, and clean up a few language consistency issues. Amendment package 2 responds to the requirements in the recently passed House Bill 2001. This bill specifies that cities must allow a duplex on each lot that allows for the development of a house. The current RIP proposal limits duplexes on lots in the constrained heights or Z overlay. And this amendment would align the residential infill project with that house bill. Amendment package 3 includes code changes related to the implementation of Senate Bill 534. This bill requires cities to allow development on pre-existing platted lots, unless the lot is steeply sloping in the 100-year floodplain, or is within an environmental overlay zone. So this amendment creates standards to confirm the eligibility of these lots for development in compliance with that bill. The Fourth Amendment package is about streamlining processes to make it easier and less costly to reconfigure narrow lots into wider lots through a single replat process. And this takes us to number five, which is a non-amendment. You may recall that this was about adding further limitations for triplexes and fourplexes on streets that lack curbs. Council instead approved changes to the local transportation improvement charge on June 24th that allow new housing types in RIP to pay into the LTIC fund when they are located on these curbless streets. By pulling this amendment, the Planning and Sustainability Commission's initial limitation for triplexes and fourplexes on gravel streets remains unchanged. The deeper affordability bonus in Amendment 6 provides for more floor area, a bit more height to allow for three full floors, and up to six units when at least half of the units are affordable to households earning up to 60% of the median family income, and two of the units meet our new visibility standards. 60% of the median family income for a two-bedroom unit translates to maximum rents of about $1,200 a month. In other words, these would be income restricted to families earning less than $48,000 a year. Amendment number 7, this final amendment, relates to historic resources. When resources in conservation districts are demolished, there is no demolition review required. This is something that the forthcoming Historic Resources Code Project is evaluating. Amendment number 7 puts in place a restriction until then that when these resources are demolished, these sites would be ineligible for triplexes and fourplexes for a period of 10 years. However, they would still be able to add ADUs or convert historic houses into triplexes or fourplexes. So for next steps, following your deliberation and votes regarding these potential amendments, staff will incorporate the necessary changes into the project report and draft code. We'll return for your review on the as amended draft at your August 5th meeting. Once you've accepted the as amended draft, you will vote at a second reading of the ordinance approximately a week later. There are several minor pieces of the proposal that are related to the implementation of Senate Bill 534 and the historically narrow lots. These changes would go into effect 30 days after their passage. The bulk of the remaining aspects of the project, like the additional housing types and scale and design changes, are slated to go into effect in August of 2021. And that concludes my presentation. I'll turn it back to you, Mayor, to begin the discussion.
Very good. Thank you for the presentation. That was short and to the point. I appreciate that. So the amendments that were just described by Morgan, they've already been moved and seconded. And so before I call a vote on each amendment in turn, is there any further discussion or questions that people would like to ask about specific amendments?
I have a question on amendment number 7.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. Morgan, number 7, I just want to be, I don't have the exact language right in front of me. This is a temporary measure, so is there an expiration built into the amendment?
There's not a specific expiration built into the amendment. The way this will work, the Historic Resources Code Project, when it comes to council, part of that will be a proposal to include a demolition review requirement for historic resources in conservation districts. And as soon as that is in place, then whatever demolition proposal or application that comes to the city would have to go through that review process. And upon getting their demolition review approved, those sites would then be eligible for new development of triplexes or fourplexes.
So at that time, does this amendment automatically expire? Do we have to take some council action, or do the new regulations supersede this amendment?
The new regulations will override this amendment. At that time, we'll have the only applicable situation would be someone who demolishes without getting approval through the city, and in which case we'd want to still have that disincentive in place.
Okay, and remind me once more when we expect those recommendations to come back.
I'm not totally sure. We're going to Planning Commission with that package in the next month.
Yeah, we will be. Hi, this is Sandra Wood, BPS. Hi. We are coming to the PSC with a package in the fall. So it'll probably be probably the new year by the time we see City Council. But this is a stopgap measure.
Yes.
As a disincentive for demolition.
That was the intention, and I just wanted to make sure that I was straight on it, and I also wanted any members of the public to hear it's a finite, temporary fix. Thank you. And that's all.
And that's the final word from Sandra's car. That's awesome. The ultimate in multitasking. Okay, very good. Any other questions on any of the other amendments? Very good. Then we'll start taking the votes. Carla, will you call the vote on Amendment Package 1? These are the technical amendments.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment is adopted. Carla, will you please call the roll for Amendment Package 2? That's House Bill 2001 related amendments.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment's adopted. And that gets us to Amendment Package number 3. This is Senate Bill 534 related amendments. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
You know, this is going to pass anyway, and I just cannot bring myself to vote for anything related to Senate Bill 534. It's just reprehensible the way it was overriding local control. No.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment is adopted. Carla, the fourth amendment package is the replat process amendments. Can you call the roll, please?
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment's adopted. And now we get to package 6. This is the deeper affordability bonus amendments. Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty.
So this is one that I have to just make a statement on. I went into this process and there's just no way we're going to be able to get deeper affordability. This was not an affordable housing issue, right? Because that's what I had been told from the very beginning. And so I want to really appreciate all the community members and organizations that came out and demanded that we build deeper affordability into RIP. And I, of course, am a big fan of deeper affordability and did not believe that it was going to be possible based on the information that I had at that time. I am thrilled to vote yes in favor of deeper affordability for housing that will become permanently affordable, because as we know, the need is not going away anytime soon. And I want to applaud my colleagues who pushed, as well as the community-based organizations who pushed and demanded that we add this component to RIP. You know, as a community activist formerly, I always believe that we can get more than we thought we could get. And I was caught this time thinking like someone who was inside government and thought that I had a very narrow box that I could operate in. And that was where I operated. I want to publicly say I was absolutely wrong. And if I had followed my instinct, I would have been on the bandwagon from the beginning. So congratulations, Commissioner Udaly, for the incredible work you did organizing folks to come and demand that we could do better. Who knew putting people at city council testifying and writing letters and talking to their elected officials could fundamentally change public policy? I am very, 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 very happy to vote aye.
Udaly.
Well, I don't know if you heard it, but I just breathed a sigh of relief because I wasn't sure where you were going with that initially.
I saw your face. Yeah.
Okay. I have said all along that while I support RIP in principle, I'm very concerned that upzoning is not going to lead to more affordable housing and will cause displacement. I believe that the Planning Bureau has put a lot of checks in place to mitigate that as much as possible, and this is one of the many ways that we're attempting to do so. So This amendment will allow affordable housing developers to be competitive in RIP zones. It won't on its own prevent displacement or ensure affordable housing at the levels we need it, but it will help. And I'm really happy to vote aye.
Fritz.
Well, this is the one element of the residential infill project that I do enthusiastically support. And this is for the people rather than for the developers. And so I appreciate that this was added. I commend Commissioner Udaly for sticking to it, and particularly with insisting on the visitability requirements. And that is very significant. I don't think we've done that before. And I appreciate that very much. I still believe that a lot of the infill development that's going to happen with this is going to be extremely expensive. This at least provides an incentive. And Commissioner Hardesty, the very first public body session I went to was the Metro Council, and I think it was back in 1991, so nearly 30 years ago. And Judy Wires, who was the presiding officer at the time, listened to six little citizens from Southwest Portland to amend the Green Spaces Bond measure at the very last hearing. And she said from the dais, there's no point in holding a public hearing if it doesn't matter what the public says when they show up. Yeah, and that has been something that I have carried into the work. And actually, you know, it's an unfortunately a well-kept secret that it actually does matter when people write in, send testimony, speak up, participate. This is, with the commission form of government especially, one of the most accessible ways that people can get to their elected officials and actually make a difference. It's only unusual because of the zoning code, because I think most people get to the zoning code and they're like, well, there's so much of it and there's so many different things and what the heck is floor area ratio, which I do believe is going to be a problem, that people will still be saying what the heck is floor area ratio for years to come. People can make a difference, and indeed elected officials can make a difference. So thank you, Commissioner Daly. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, for your leadership on this. Aye.
Wheeler.
Well, I first want to express my gratitude to the community members who've been championing this type of amendment since at least last winter. Thank you to our affordable housing developers who voiced their intent and their desire to use this bonus should it pass. And thank you to the organizations who are organized around inclusive, smart growth like Portland Neighbors Welcome and anti-displacement advocacy organizations. I also want to thank the Home Builders Association for supporting a priority focus on incentives for affordable housing with this bonus. This is a good one. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for keeping this one in alignment. I vote aye. The amendment is adopted. So that leaves us with Package 7, the Historic Resources Demolition Disincentive Amendments. Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty.
Caught me in mid-bite. Aye.
Udaly?
I will just mention once again, this mirrors the changes we made with Better Housing by Design. It is temporary. I believe it will discourage demolitions in the short term. And it is, as we mentioned, a stopgap measure until the historic resource project completes and we have new regulations in place. I vote aye.
Fritz?
So I'm very enthusiastic about this one too, and thank you, colleagues, for your support of it. Thanks to Peggy Moretti and Kristen Miner and others in the community for making the case for this. And it was a little difficult to puzzle through. Thanks to the city attorneys and the planning staff who helped us all figure it out. And it shows that you can have infill development and you can still preserve the historic resources, which we have so few of. Aye.
Wheeler.
Yeah, this was really the most complex of all the amendments, just in terms of wrapping my arms around it. On its face, I really didn't see the need to adopt the amendment. I believe that restricting growth in specific areas for a certain amount of time can arguably hinder the city's progress in reaching our comprehensive plan, our climate action plan, and our equity goals and objectives. However, on balance, I am mindful that this amendment gives the necessary time so that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff can propose a specific strategy to City Council for how to balance adaptive reuse of buildings and districts that have historic significance and are need to accommodate more growth. As a reminder, this project is called the Historic Resources Code Project, which has been mentioned. I've directed my staff to work closely with BPS staff and Prosper Portland staff, the Historic Landmarks Commission, and community partners to help guide this project going forward. I want to make it clear that this project must move the marker on our smart growth, climate, and equity goals in a measurable way. I also want to set some reasonable expectations. We won't have an answer to all of the questions or have all of the solutions in the Historic Resources Code Project, because as 2020 taught us, you can only anticipate so much. That being said, on balance, this is a very good amendment, and I vote aye. The amendment is adopted. So that was the last amendment up for consideration. Therefore, I'll turn it back to BPS staff to remind us of our next steps. Morgan, are you up next?
Hi, Mayor. Thank you for that. So next steps, staff will take the six amendments that you just passed and incorporate those into our staff report and draft code and update the necessary documents to reflect those changes. We'll return for your review of that draft on August 5th at 2 p.m. Once you have made your decision about that draft, we'll come back to you for a second reading about a week later. We still have to confirm that final date.
All right, very good. Thank you. That concludes today's hearing. This item will return on August 5th at 2 p.m. time certain. Is there anything else, Lauren, on this particular issue?
Just to be clear, we'll be voting on the findings in addition to the staff report on August 5th. And the record is closed and it will remain closed.
What she said, that's why we pay legal counsel. Thank you, Lauren, for that clarification. Colleagues, our next item is actually two items that are going to be read together, but they are time certain items at 3:30 p.m. And so we will be in recess until 3:30 p.m. Thank you. Looks like everybody is back. We are now back in session. This is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council on July 9th. Carla, we're now ready for time certain items 552 and 553. If you could read those together, please.
Yes, 552, authorize $1,623,850 for grant agreements to be divided among the five nonprofit neighborhood district coalitions to support neighborhood associations and community engagement activities from July 1, 2020 through June 30, 2021. And 5.3, authorize $851,646 for grant agreements with Center for Intercultural Organizing, Unite Oregon, Latino Network, Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, Native American Youth and Family Center, Momentum Alliance, and Urban League of Portland for the Diversity and Civic Leadership Organizing Project for July 1, 2020 through June 30, 2021.
Thank you. Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, colleagues, before we begin, I would like to move to accept the substitute ordinance. As you know, there is a matter of outstanding documents with one of the district coalition offices, Southwest Neighborhoods, Inc., or Sweeney, and I'd like to officially move to accept the District Coalition Office Ordinance as amended.
Second.
Thank you.
We have a motion from Commissioner Udaly and a second from Commissioner Hardesty. Is there any further discussion before we put the substitute on the table?
I can give an extended explanation of the amendment if anyone wants me to do that. Otherwise, I don't need to weigh in.
Why don't we hear from Commissioner Fritz first and come back to you? Commissioner Fritz.
Yeah, I think it would be, I appreciate the amendment, Commissioner, and I've seen it, but if you could just explain briefly what it is for the benefit of community members watching.
Sure, okay.
Thank you.
In April, Civic Life requested a set of documents from Sweeney after hearing multiple allegations of mismanagement and after members of Sweeney's own board were prevented from seeing the documents. Sweeney responded with a host of questions, including questioning the city's authority to ask for such documents, which Civic Life and our city attorney thoroughly answered. Civic Life offered to meet with Sweeney to help them prioritize documents for collection. Civic Life also granted Sweeney's requested extension to June 30th. As of June 30th, Sweeney had yet to share 12 of the 15 requested documents with Civic Life. Moreover, Sweeney said that they would only turn over those documents once they had received $31,885 for staff hours and attorney fees before they would submit them. This response was troubling and necessitates that we do not award more funding to this organization until we can determine if there has been any issue with Sweeney's governance or finances. I had certainly hoped it wouldn't come to this, but at this moment in time, I see no other options. Sweeney has not upheld the terms of the contract that they signed. They have not complied or communicated in good faith within the deadlines they requested. And though alleged as of now, the nature of the allegations of financial mismanagement is serious enough that the city cannot responsibly grant funding to Sweeney until we have clarity on what has happened. For these reasons, I'm putting forward an amendment that holds funding from Sweeney until we resolve this issue. I think that Civic Life has handled this matter appropriately. They have sought to understand for themselves the nature of the allegations and only stepped in when Sweeney failed to provide documents to its own board members. Working with attorneys to provide Sweeney with the legal information they needed to comply, granting their extension requests, offering to do follow-up meetings with them, and reminding them of the deadline that Sweeney chose themselves. It's my hope that Sweeney will promptly provide the outstanding records and that we can quickly reconsider their funding once we have clarity on this issue. So for now, I just ask that everyone support this amendment to ensure responsible financial partnership and due diligence for both the city and Sweeney.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I thought we had decided that we weren't going to have an extended discussion about that. What my request for what's in the amendment was simply to tell people at home what's in the amendment. So what's in the amendment is that the funding for Sweeney is still still included in the overall total, but not directed to be dispersed until the results of the audit are known.
Okay.
And if I could just ask a clarifying question. My understanding, Commissioner Udaly, is that your office has met with Sweeney and they have agreed that they will provide that information. Is that correct?
I believe the documents will be forthcoming.
Okay, very good. Is there any further discussion then before we vote on the substitute ordinance? Seeing none, Carla, please call the roll on the substitute.
Hardesty?
I just want to thank the Office of Civic and Community Life for their due diligence in trying to resolve this issue before today. Thank you, Commissioner Udaly, for again, trying to resolve this issue before today. It's unfortunate we were not able to. I support your amendment. I vote aye.
Udaly.
Thank you, colleagues, for your support. I vote aye.
Fritz?
So to be clear, many of the documents that are being requested have been locked up in the Multnomah Center and some are still locked up in the city archives. So there is that issue to be resolved before compliance can be achieved. Others of them are attorney-client privileged and not required under the contract. That said, we will have more time to discuss these issues and make sure that all of the documentation that should be provided is provided, and I hope to see the Southwest contract coming back in the next month or two. Aye.
Wheeler.
I want to make it very clear that I support our neighborhood coalitions. They provide valuable resources to the community and their valued city partners. And obviously, in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, many neighborhood associations and coalitions have really stepped up in important ways to serve communities even more. And for that, I'm very grateful. In regards to the issue that's currently at hand, I support Commissioner Udaly's substitute ordinance. And I strongly encourage Civic Life to work as quickly as possible with folks at Sweeney to retrieve the requested records and to complete the audit. I expect that no permanent decision on Sweeney's funding will be made without engaging council offices. And I appreciate the efforts that Commissioner Udaly and Civic Life are putting into this. And based on my understanding, the folks at Sweeney are willing to work with Civic Life. And I think that shows that we have the ability to resolve this forthwith, which I hope we do. I vote aye. The substitute is now on the table. Back to you, Commissioner Daly.
Thank you, Mayor. And because I believe that we have consensus on council, I'd like to move that we add an emergency clause since we are actually behind schedule on this, I believe.
Second.
We have a second from Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you.
And why don't we go ahead and vote to put the emergency clause on. Carla, please call the roll.
Ernestine?
I'm sorry, Mayor. Did we actually vote on accepting the amendment? Oh, we did, because we all had a long conversation about
that. Yeah, so the substitute's on the table, and now we're voting to put an emergency clause on the ordinance.
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
So I should note that I withdrew my other amendment with the understanding that there would be the discussions that Mayor Wheeler referred to, so that the I'm happy to be able to get the money out to the remaining coalitions. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is now an emergency ordinance, and it'll take full effect upon approval. Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you again, Mayor. And now on to the items before us this afternoon, funding the district coalition offices and diversity and civic leadership programs through next year. The COVID-19 crisis has shown all Portlanders the value of resiliency, and this funding will help maintain our community infrastructure and yield a more resilient Portland. This crisis, its disparate impact on BIPOC communities, and the national reckoning that we're going through also show how critical it is to continue funding BIPOC-led and culturally specific organizations. Unite Oregon, Latino Network, Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, Native American Youth and Family Center, Momentum Alliance, and the Urban League of Portland are frontline responders during this time of crisis, working to prioritize the needs of Portlanders at the intersections of a public health crisis, racism, and other forms of oppression. And I hope that we provide them with additional support in the future. City investment in them is important under normal circumstances, and it's essential now. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Director Sukri, Andrea Williams, and Shuk Arivjanov from the Office of Community and Civic Life to begin the presentation. Welcome, everyone.
Good afternoon to members of council, colleagues, and community members. We do have a slide deck that Carla or Keelan will help us navigate, if that could be shared on the screen. Thank you very much. And you could fast forward to the next slide, to the third slide. So for the record, my name is Sukri, and I serve as director for the Office of Community and Civic Life. Today, we present the two ordinances to provide 2021 grant funding to the nonprofit district coalitions and the diversity and civic leadership program partners. Next slide, please. I will provide a general overview, budget context, and rationale aligned with the city's COVID-19 and racial justice response. Then my colleagues will present on the two programs. And then after that, I will provide some additional information to the amendment that was just introduced. We want to acknowledge that the context in which these ordinances are brought forth, this is a transformative moment due to COVID-19 and the rising up for racial justice. The impact of COVID-19 on the city's resources are unprecedented, unpredictable, and long-lasting, and we know that what we know of as of today is subject to change. And frankly, it is a little bit of awkward timing. We would prefer to have the better revenue projections and updated budget guidance that we expect during the fall budget monitoring process. These ordinances are presented at this time due to the practical matter that our current contracts with these groups ended on June 30th. And we want to provide a bridge from now until those fall bump conversations and to do so in a way that could keep all our options open. Next slide, please. With the information available at this time, we are proposing one-year awards at fiscal year 19-20 levels to accomplish several important things. The first is to provide some measure of stability for longstanding partners. Our DCL partners, we've been with between 4 to 10 years, and we've contracted with the neighborhood district coalitions between 41 and 46 years. And I want to pause here to state that while we often discuss these two programs together, they really are not at all similar in their history, level of funding, or relationship to the city. They have vastly different starting points, and they've been subject to different processes, some of which my colleagues will share with you today. Next slide, please. The second objective is to preserve the city's ability to adjust to more clear revenue forecasts in the fall, including the possibility of meaningful reductions. So the fiscal year 2021 budget reflects a 5.6 general fund reduction, about $541,000 for Civic Life. Of this, the lion's share, $421,000, is largely through reductions to Civic Life staff through the elimination of COLA, merit, and furloughs. So an additional $119,000 must still be identified in the fall bump. Civic Life's budget situation is unique. We commit nearly 32% of the total Bureau budget at the beginning of the year through 12 contracts, including the DCO and DCL contracts, and for city staff district coalition offices to maintain parity with the nonprofit DCOs. So this puts the Bureau in a precarious position because we know that larger cuts may be needed in the fall. And if we commit such a large portion of our budget at the beginning of the year, and we are required to take larger cuts in the fall bump, this creates the problem of having the rest of the Bureau carry those additional cuts on top of the cuts already taken in the budget, while DCOs and DCLs would not. So this is not equitable, and it disproportionately harms the Bureau's smaller programs. So we had first considered recommending lesser amounts than that reflected the probable need to cut further in the fall. So we considered, should we offer 85 cents, for example, with hopes that could be increased to a dollar later? Or should we offer the dollar up front and then possibly have to reduce that amount? While cutting up front and adding back to the amount makes more logical sense and is probably more equitable, we do not have a cut amount to base it on. Next slide, please. We cannot determine better than the city economist, budget office, or city council what the funding level should be until there's a more clear revenue picture in August, and then make corresponding adjustments through the fall budget monitoring process. So rather than independently picking a speculative number for reduction now, we apply the same approach that the city is taking and that is being offered by other bureaus. And that is why these awards include the critical provision that these grants can be adjusted as needed with the rest of the Civic Life budget in the fall bump. Next slide, please. The third objective related to this approach is to allow us to transition to a more racial justice and climate action focused bureau, as outlined in the city's COVID-19 resiliency resolution and the recently adopted core values of anti-racism, equity, transparency, communication, collaboration, and fiscal responsibility. As binding city policy, we must live up to these words in every decision we make. Undoing institutional racism is for all the bureaus, for all of us, and we've been working to do this at Civic Life. It must be said that neglect is also kind of a form of abuse, and Civic Life in the city has neglected many communities, and that is real harm and another dimension of institutional racism. So one-year awards ensures that we keep options open in the coming years for investing in models that serve new realities and reflect the priorities and leadership of Black, Indigenous, and people of color, who are also people with disabilities, people who are unsheltered, and young people, and more. So recent events have amplified the longstanding calls for investing in a broader range of community groups, and not just generally for equity, but specifically to address anti-Black racism. As I mentioned before, the DCO program is fundamentally different than the DCO program. As we center BIPOC communities in our COVID recovery, we cannot lose sight of the fact that the DCO program is among only a few in the city that specifically invests in Black, Indigenous, and people of color. And we know that it's only a starting point. We must add more voices and more communities in the coming years. So while we hope for the best, we need to keep all our options open for when we have a better revenue picture in the coming months. A reduced revenue environment is exactly the most important time to apply these values to our budgets, programs, and services. That concludes my remarks. And next, Shuk Aranjanov, my colleague, will present on the Diversity and Civic Leadership Program.
Commissioner Hardesty had a question before we jump into that. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Sue. Sue, did I just hear you say that Civic Life is the only city program that invests in Black?
No. I hope I said that correctly. But I said it is one I said it is unique, and we believe it's of only one of a few that specifically invests. So I am sure there are some others. I did not mean to say it was singular.
That's what I thought I heard. So I just wanted to check that, because that's simply not true. I mean,
That's right. There are some others. Right?
There are a lot of programs that invest in Black people. So I didn't want that to be left on the record. Thank you.
All right. Well, good afternoon, dear council members. My name is Shuk Aranjanov. I'm Civic Engagement Coordinator with Civic Life. Next slide, please, if I may. Thank you. I will provide the overview of Diversity Civic Leadership Program, to which we refer further to as DCL. Next slide, please. As Director Ree mentioned, we present to authorize the DCL ordinance for six community organizations: Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, Latino Network, Momentum Alliance, Native American Youth Alliance, Unite Oregon, and Urban League of Portland, at the total amount of $851,646, which puts it at $141,941 for each member. Just chronologically, the history of it: the DCL program was initiated and authorized in 2010 with mentioned organization, except Momentum Alliance at that time, with a total amount of $373,550 at $74,710 each. Later in 2012, the increase in funding were authorized for members at $79,722. That's a $5,000 increase from 2012. And then since fiscal year 2013, the funding has been increasing through annual grant amendments. In 2016, Momentum Alliance was added to the DCL program and authorized for $65,000. Right now, currently, all DCL partners are at the same dollar amounts on their grants. Next slide, please. Again, we are allocating $851,646 for this new fiscal 2021. These are the amounts at fiscal 2019 levels at $141,941 each for each partner. If you look at the last column, that shows the ratio of Civic Life funding in percentage to their total organizational revenues. These are six organizations led by people of color, immigrant, and refugees, involved in leadership development, racial justice, and climate action. I'd like to provide some highlights for each organization. Latino Network implements the program Academia de Líderes. The program provides emerging leaders training on grassroots organizing and leadership skills. The training involves three elements: introduction to social justice, aligning it with a culture, and exercise in class by action and reflection. So far, the organization prepared over 300 leaders who are involved and engaged in the community at different levels. To say, Debbie Cabrales, who is a Leaders Program graduate, currently serves on the Woodburn City Council. Unite Oregon has been working to build a unified movement for justice. They work to end profiling campaign, a three-year span in partnership of community and law enforcement. The legislation secured resources for tracking and ending police profiling through the state. The Urban League offered civic education, engagement opportunities, and community-led organizing organizing spaces to Black Portlanders to inspire them to use their civic power. DCL participants learn about government structures and engage decision makers. Urban League incorporates universal leadership curriculum while tailoring content to specific groups, young adults in a youth program, adults with experiences of housing instability and homelessness, as well as under and unemployed people. Next, Momentum Alliance provided free social justice camps for youth. They had opportunities to design the camp training curriculum, facilitate workshops from displacement to indigenous solidarity and self-care. Just to mention, organization's board is 100% people of color, with 85% of it youth 25 and under. During the current COVID-19 pandemic, ERCO and all DCL partners immediately used their communication channels to broadcast resources available to community members in target languages, including recommendations from Oregon Health Authority, Multnomah County Health Department, Portland Emergency Coordination Center, and CDC. Native American Youth Alliance provided nearly 100 boxes of food a week to insecure and needed families. Well, these are just some examples of great work. Our Office of Community and Civic Life staff has been collectively working with all DCL partners in improving livability and sense of community with a focus on communities of color, immigrant, and refugees. As we look forward, we will build on steps undertaken over the last and current fiscal year for next levels of investment for coming in the future. That is to say, that is the potential to open up a partnership to existing and wider group of nonprofit community organizations through another competitive process in the future. Well, I'd like to thank you for your consideration in authorizing this ordinance for this fiscal 2021 for RDCL partners. Now I'd like to turn to Andrea Williams, who will present on district coalition offices. Thank you.
And we have a question from Commissioner Fritz before we do that. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation, Shook. I appreciate that you gave me the credit for starting the district, the Diversity Leadership Program in 2010, but I actually need to give credit to Mayor Tom Potter. He initiated it after this Southeast Uplift asked in 2007 and 8 when the first allocation went to Latino Network, and then the other four organizations were added also under Mayor Potter. So I'm hoping that after I'm gone that people will remember that I did some good things, so I did want to just put that on the record. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Shook. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners Udaly, Fritz, and Hardesty. I'm Andrea Williams, Partnerships Manager for the Office of Community and Civic Life. And Keelan, if you wouldn't mind going to the next slide, please. I'm going to present on the District Coalition Office Ordinance, which would authorize one-year grant agreements from the Office of Community and Civic Life to four district coalitions to provide community engagement and neighborhood association support services that improve the livability and character of their neighborhoods and the city. I'm going to do a quick overview of the program, review the ordinance, and then share some of what they've been doing in response to COVID-19. Next slide, please. The nonprofit district coalition offices, along with the two city staffed offices, provide support and technical assistance to the 94 recognized volunteer-based neighborhood associations, in addition to support for community groups and individual residents. Five nonprofit neighborhood district coalitions have been the sole contractors with the City of Portland for this program since 1974. And over the last 46 years since the start of the program, there has never been a competitive or open bidding process for these contracts. The ordinance we're looking at today authorizes $1,326,436 for grants to be divided among the four nonprofit district coalitions from July 1, 2020 through June 30th, 2021. Next slide, please. The total funding will be distributed among four district coalition offices in the following manner, as you can see on the spreadsheet. This approach allows Civic Life to maintain fiscal year 19-20 core funding support to the district coalition offices, but we did want to mention that it does not include the small grant funding. So just to quickly walk you through the spreadsheet, for example, Central Northeast Neighbors received $284,695 in fiscal year 1920, and of that, $10,000 was for small grants. This table also shows you that the grant amount made up 100% of their organizational budget. So for fiscal year 2021, the ordinance proposes $274,695, or what is exactly last year's grant minus the small grants. The small grant funding is a program that district coalitions run to support event or project-based neighborhood activities. And Civic Life decided to cut small grants funding in order to meet our budget reduction requirements while still maintaining core funding levels for district coalition general budgets. We think that this is the best approach to provide some measure of stability to our partners during this turbulent time. A few other parts of the ordinance we wanted to be sure to highlight. Finding number 7 that talks about the council waiving requirements related to contracting of professional, technical, and expert services and waives a requirement to issue a competitive application process. Just wanted to add a note that the language was added there because the city has evolved its contracting and grant-making practices. And this language ensures that we're complying with those practices. We submitted Exhibit A with the ordinance, and that gives you more details and background. I'm not going to go through that right now, but if you would like, we can review them during the question time if we need to. And they're also there for your reference on Exhibit A. Finally, we also wanted to point out Section D. As Sook described earlier, given Civic Life's unique position and the uncertain economic situation we're in, these amounts are also subject to fall bump changes. The language in Section D is offered by the City Attorney's Office to address the potential need to adjust agreements through the fall budget monitoring process. And lastly, turning to the DCOs or District Coalition's efforts during COVID, I wanted to share that, like so many other nonprofits and community groups since the onset of COVID-19, district coalition offices and neighborhood associations have been working hard to modify their plans and respond to community needs. And one example I'd like to share is the public health mailer that they sent out to over 200,000 households in the city, and thousands more were reprinted for direct service providers in recognition of the digital divide and the importance of connecting Portlanders to vital information. The district coalition offices collaborated to produce a bilingual Spanish and English mailer containing city and county public health information in an effort to reach all Portlanders. So with that, that concludes my presentation. Thank you for your time. If there are no questions from council, I'd like to turn it back to Sook to share more information about Sweeney.
I do have a question, because I'm actually concerned that we're mixing budget with policy. The way this was framed, I'm actually concerned about the framing around whether or not the district coalition offices have ever been out for RFP. As you know, the charter now is very clear about what that process is. So I believe today's conversation is really about a one-year funding opportunity as we await what the budget's doing. I'm always concerned with how information is presented, and I just want to state my objection to how this district coalition office information has been presented, because we're starting based on some assumptions that have not actually been part of the dialogue or conversation today.
Commissioner Hardesty, no offense was meant. The item number 7 in the ordinance refers to the fact that we have procurement and financial policies, which are considered binding city policies, that require council to waive the procurement requirement and also the grant making bidding requirement. And so because that's not been a practice coming to council, we want to make sure you understood that you actually need to waive those requirements because those are our city policies. Those city policies also were adopted in 2014 and at a different, I'm not sure when the procurement code was. So that's the intention for introducing that context.
And so we've been doing this since the 70s, and we've had to waive every year in order to give neighborhood district coalition offices a allocation of funding.
Actually, Commissioner Hardesty, I don't know, is the exhibit on the slide deck, Andrea?
Yeah, it's after the questions slide.
Okay. Actually, could you forward one, Keelan, so we could just go to that exhibit to make it, okay, right there. Actually, no, the pattern has been that, and we have not looked at every single ordinance, but we have looked at a lot of them. In 2002, it was really clear in that ordinance that the council finds that it was determined that these services are subject to 5.68, which is the procurement code, and it waived the requirements related to the contract. And so that was the first time we saw that the city acknowledged it should be procured under 5.68 and waived it as required, and as council can. Council can absolutely waive the requirement. And then we see that the following year, the next ordinance just extends the contract for another year. And if you can advance the slide, please. And then another, and then all of a sudden in 2008, whereas previously it was acknowledged that these should be contracts under 5.68, they are now grants in 2008. And in 2008, we did not have an open notification or competitive process for grants. But then, and then in 2010, we renewed the grants for 5 more years. And if you can advance the slide. In 2014, through Resolution 37086, City Council amended binding city policy FIN 2.04, which says that grants shall be issued after a competitive process. And that, and so what we're trying to say here is that we are catching up to the city policies and practices. We want to make sure it, we have not been consistent as a bureau in presenting it as such to City Council, but we do have a record since 2010 that we know that we should, and that this, and we are making sure that Council has appropriately exempted this ordinance from contracting and the grants, the grant policy this year, so that we're doing it right this year.
So I just want to be really clear. What you're asking us to do today is only to fund a one-year extension of these contracts as so that we can see what the financial picture looks like in the fall. We are not adopting any policy around what will or won't happen with these contracts in the future. Am I correct?
That's, well, actually, technically, our last ordinance, the grant agreement ended, so this ordinance is a new agreement, period. So we have no authority to keep amending contracts. So we're not adding another year to the last ordinance. The last ordinance was for a 5-year period. So we were we could do annual amendments after the budget is approved. And this year is a completely new ordinance setting a new contract. And it is for just 1 year.
I'm more confused now than I was coming into this meeting. I thought I came in really prepared because I thought the meeting was just about how do we get through this transition around the budget. I am concerned that you're asking us to make policy decisions in connection with this 1-year grant that we have not had a fuller conversation on.
The policy, just so I understand, the policy decision you're referring to is that it includes item number 7, which
there is a lot of things that are up in the air as it relates to the coalitions and the neighborhood association and DCL groups, and those are conversations that I'm assuming we're going to be having.
Yes.
So passing policy before we have actually concluded where we're going seems to be a little bit backwards. I mean, it seems to be, so I'm concerned that you're fixing something that's been broken for a long time now without having a policy conversation.
And Director Ree, Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Udaly, I think would like to jump into this conversation. Commissioner Fritz, did you have your hand raised first? just on this issue, yes. I think they might be able to provide some clarity. Commissioner Fritz, then Commissioner Udaly, then back to Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. So, Commissioner Hardesty, I appreciate your point. And normally, we would be doing a five-year new contract. We do them every 5 years. We had the discussion back when there was the debate before COVID about what should happen. And at that point, we were thinking that we might do a three-year contract because we are up in the air. We don't have the code changes done. You're absolutely right that there isn't consensus on what should be done. So we had said that it would take 3 years to actually have a proper inclusive process to decide how to promote community engagement moving forward. And then because of COVID, we're just doing the 1 year. But I agree, this is not saying that we are definitely going to do some, we don't know what else we're going to do. We're going to have that discussion either later this year or you'll have it next year.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just want to clarify, it's understandable why you're confused because there's lots of complexities with procurement and grant making, and this has been our de facto policy without actually taking the step to waive those requirements. So Sook is just a very thorough person and wants to make sure that everything is in the document that should be in there. This language should have been in the contracts because we have been disregarding existing city rules every time we have renewed this contract. So it's actually not adding anything or changing anything. We're just dotting our I's and crossing our T's.
I actually disagree that we're not changing anything. What we're fundamentally doing is changing the policy under which these contracts would be awarded in the future. And without actually having a conversation about, you know, it's like if we've been doing it for, since 2014, wrong, then why change the policy today without having the policy conversation prior to changing the policy?
Yeah. But it does only apply to this 1 year contract. And like I said, this has been the de facto policy. The language has just been left out. And I apologize for adding confusion to this issue. We're really just trying to correct some irregularities that we've discovered. But it's necessary in order for us to move forward with this item to waive the requirements, and we would be waiving them whether this item 7 was in there or not. Right. But I think including item 7 makes the agreement more correct. I'm going to stop there because I'm starting to get confused too.
Yeah, I just think that it's important that the public knows what to expect, right? Because we're all kind of in limbo because COVID actually has delayed a lot of work that would have happened.
Yeah.
So I can certainly appreciate that. But again, I did not want to take a vote that actually committed me to a policy decision without actually having a policy conversation.
Right? I mean, it's what we've done every year without stating it. So we're just asking to do it this year. Otherwise, I don't know how long it would take for us to advance these contracts and allocate the grants. But that will be part of the conversation.
Yeah, money out the door. But I was just, I was concerned both. I still have an objection with just how the information was presented because it was presented based on some value statement that actually hasn't been actually articulated and agreed to by the council. The reason it hasn't gone out to bid was because that wasn't how we gave contracts to neighborhood coalition offices. That's not saying that that's right, wrong, or indifferent, but that was the city policy at the time. And so framing is very important, and the words we use are important. So I just don't, I don't see any bad people in this effort, right? I just see us get to the next stage.
Well, I mean, to be clear, if anyone's in the wrong, it's the city that's been in the wrong. This is not any kind of condemnation of the recipients. And I mean, these are just facts that we're presenting. I mean, I think the basic point is that we have been disregarding our own regulations, and we need to get right. We need to get right with ourselves on how we're going to do it moving forward.
And I would say it's true in both of those programs, because both of those programs do not have competitive bid processes at all. So we don't have a model that actually is something that we should hold up as an example of what works when we're trying to engage our community. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Good discussion, Commissioner Fritz.
I would just really appreciate it if we can focus on getting this money to the coalitions and avoid the things done wrong in the past discussion, because that's not what we're here to discuss.
All right, with that, let's move on. Who's next?
So I'm next. I am speaking to some parts of the new amendment. And Keelan, could you put the slide deck back up, please? And I'll try to move through this quickly. And I believe after this, maybe it's slide number 20 to start on. That right there. That's good. Because some of this information was presented in the introduction of the amendment, I will only briefly review the timeline. And there is another section about issues of concern that I would like to spend time on. I'll try to highlight some of the items not written on the page.
So I would just say that this is not necessary for you to go through again.
I will just then go right to the, if you could skip through, this says, not about the timeline. I will take your direction and skip through issues of concern. Okay. I want to say that, let me forward my to our...
So before you begin, Commissioner Daly and Commissioner Fritz have their hands raised.
Oh, no.
Commissioner Fritz, do you have your hand raised?
So we have what I thought was a consensus compromise on the table. There are many discussions that need to be had, and trying this issue today is not necessary. We have a way forward. We say that we're not going to be funding Sweeney in this session, so I don't think it's helpful to be putting things on the record which could be disputed.
I would say I if the council does not want me to go over this. That is, I will, of course, agree to your direction, but I want to say that these next few slides are not related to the records request. This is related to areas of concern that are happening right now in 2020. We do not have to present it for you. There's public testimony. There's other people who would like to add to the record, but there is information about...
Yeah, I agree. So just advance through this. It's not necessary. We've come to an agreement, and there's going to be plenty of public testimony.
Let me just say, Sue, some things are just not appropriate to bring to the council, right? This is work that happens behind the scenes. And when we have it at council, it's because we've come to a conclusion, right? This is not where dirty laundry gets aired. This is, right, we're about solutions. I feel like this, I agree with Commissioner Fritz, is that we've all been briefed. We know what's going on. We've taken appropriate action. Let's just go to whatever's next on your agenda.
That's fine, Commissioner Hardesty. And actually, because you moved so fast, this was submitted before agreement was reached to. So I agree with you. We can move on. But this was submitted previously to there being agreement, so now we can move forward.
Yes, if I may be so bold, Director Ree, you have four commissioners who are ready to support your request on these ordinances, and I would encourage you to continue to move on if you want these ordinances to be adopted, and my assumption is you do.
Yeah, sir, I'm encouraged and I'm in agreement. Thank you.
Good, thank you.
There are no more remarks, sir. So unless there's questions, public testimony is also.
Excellent. Do you have any invited testimony, directory, or should we go right to public testimony?
No invited testimony.
All right, very good. So Carla, we will go now to public testimony. How many folks do we have signed up?
I show 22 had registered.
Okay, very good. And I just want to be clear on the public testimony. We have, as a council, withdrawn the funding through the substitute ordinance for the Sweeney organization until we can get the information and have a thorough review of the information. This is not the time for people to make additional allegations. This is the time for us to adopt the two ordinances, including the substitute ordinance that Commissioner Udaly has put on the table. So we will ask the testimony be germane specifically to the substitute ordinance, as well as the ordinance related to the grant agreements. And with that, Commissioner Hardesty, you have a comment?
Yes, excuse me, Mayor. I have a hard stop at 5. So I'm not sure that emergency clause is going to work if we have 20-some people signed up to testify. So,
well, let's see how many people after my stipulation we actually have to testify. Because we don't want to lose the quorum, let's go ahead and take 2 minutes of testimony each. And we will see where we are at 4:59. And if it's the will of the sponsor, then perhaps we will take the vote so that we can pass it on an emergency basis. But I'll leave that up to the sponsor. First individual, Carla.
Is Linda Nedekoven.
2 minutes, name for the record. Hello, Linda. Linda, are you muted still? Let's see. Is she on the phone?
Switch. Looks like she's on a computer.
Okay, Linda, the mute is down on the, if you drag your cursor to the lower left-hand corner, that should show you a mute button. And if you're on the phone, *6 on your.
It's the upper right. Thank you.
Oh, you've got the upper right. How does that work? Okay, good. You figured it out. You're smarter than me.
Different device than I usually use. Sorry. I just wanted, Linda Nedekoven for the record, I just wanted to speak to the possibility of the need for budget cuts in a fall bump. And I only wanted to ask that council recommend that if such adjustments are needed, that a process be set up that brings the DCL partners and the coalition people together in some appropriate way, given COVID. To really work together to find solutions in keeping with the values that Sook has articulated, a way to identify gaps and work to bring resources and opportunities to the greatest number of Portland during this crisis time. And this is a transitional moment. And the more we have a chance to understand each other's goals and missions and histories as organizations all trying to do civic engagement, I think the more creative we can be in terms of dealing with cuts or adjustments that are needed. And this could also be kind of a first step toward those conversations that need to happen next year about the future structure and role and funding for coalitions. So it seems as though it could be, you know, building that first step. So that's all I wanted to say, is to please consider, you know, using the crisis if it occurs to bring this conversation to the forefront and allow the people that have been doing the work to work together to come up with ideas for cuts. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda. Appreciate it.
Next is Sean Green.
Hi, Sean.
Hi. Thank you, Council. My name is Sean Green. I'm the chair of the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods. I'm here to speak in support of the funding that the Northeast Coalition receives from the city and would like to take an opportunity to share some of the work that we're doing to support our community that's made possible from your support. Over the last 4 years, the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods has been working to expand beyond the traditional neighborhood association system drawing inspiration from the grassroots effort that created the coalitions from which Portland became a national leader on community-led efforts. We have become more inclusive and more collaborative, and our community and environmental efforts speak to the intersection of our own work. Collaborations with environmental, local food providers, and other grassroots organizations work to protect our community and build capacity, resilience, and awareness and support for common issues we all face. The Northeast Coalition just published our 15th edition of our free quarterly newspaper and expanded those resources to an online platform. We're currently investing in community-driven media at a time when mainstream media is being consolidated. We have used our expertise to partner with the Multnomah County and other coalitions and organizations to create a bilingual all-city COVID-19 mailer. We've worked and joined forces with Mackenzie River Gathering Foundation to support organizations and efforts to provide a safety net to the most vulnerable members of our community. NEC and staff have contributed to efforts and joined the city in raising awareness around missing and murdered Indigenous people, and continue to do this work through involvement in conversations related to resources invested in public safety. NECN invests in our community by providing fiscal sponsorship and technical assistance and project management support. We hope to continue this work to support small nonprofit organizations whose existence is at risk. Active members of our organizations do this work in part by serving on nonprofit boards to strengthen our relationships and collective work. A current effort underway by NECN in partnership with the Interfaith Alliance on Poverty hopes to demonstrate community support for efforts to ensure our community has, everyone in our community has a safe and decent place to sleep and access to hygiene resources. NECN has prioritized conversations and advocacy that work to better our community and has placed equity at the heart of our work. I participated in the 3.96 code change
process. That's 2 minutes.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mayor, the next group, about 18, are sharing a PowerPoint, so we were going to call about three at a time.
Good luck with that. All right.
Yeah, the first three we go with Shannon Hiller-Webb, Jim McLaughlin, and Aslan Newsom.
Hi, my name is Shannon Hiller-Webb, and Mayor, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry, thank you. I do understand the direction that you've just provided, and I would like to beg a moment of your time to discuss it with you. We have spent tireless hours trying to document what we believe should inform some of the investigation that's going to be forthwith in as you review these documents around Sweeney, and I think it can provide context for a valuable investigation if you could.
So look, I do want to hear this presentation, mm-hmm. and it's important. And I know you've put a lot of work into it, but it is no longer germane to the ordinances before us today. So I would like to hear it, and I'm sure some of my colleagues would too, but I'd like to hear it at a different time, not today.
Do you have a time idea of when that would
I will absolutely commit right here and now to carving out time for you to give that presentation to me. And I will set, how long does it typically take?
Well, we prepared 3 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes of testimony. We have 17 people within this PowerPoint who've all reoriented their schedules to be present.
I totally understand that. I get it. Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. Shannon, I just want to really appreciate all the work that you've put into this and all the work that you devoted to Sweeney. The challenge is testimony really needs to be germane to the item. And because it's clear that we have consensus, everyone is supporting this amended ordinance and we are withholding funding from Sweeney, it's just not the correct time to share all of this. Everyone who signs up has a right to give testimony, but the testimony should be, do you support this ordinance or do you not? Not airing, and I've read through the presentation and I really appreciate it. It was very enlightening to me and I do encourage my colleagues to view it as well. But I just...
Commissioner,
if I could... forum and... We'd really like to move forward.
Commissioner Hardesty had a comment.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, I'm happy to see it at another time as well. It's just not germane to the vote that we're going to take today.
Well, I'm happy to take the direction from City Council, and it appears that we will remove our testimony from today's docket.
Thank you. And I will make sure that I work around your schedule and accommodate your schedule. I would very much like to hear this presentation, and I'll absolutely be engaged on it. It's just not appropriate any longer in combination with these ordinances.
As well,
I'm sorry, Commissioner Hardesty, sorry.
Then as will I. I want to hear what you have to say, but it's just not germane today because of the change we've made.
Well, I thank you for the vote that you did on the amendment. I appreciate the time and energy that you're going to spend on doing the investigation to get to the truth. And I look forward to having the opportunity to present what we've created and share further greater concerns.
Good. And I thank you. And I thank your colleagues who've taken the time to show up today. I know that's no small commitment, and I do appreciate it. And I look forward to hearing the presentation in full.
Thank you.
Mayor, I just want to make sure that we're not cutting off anyone that does have relevant testimony to give or maybe doesn't support the ordinance.
Yeah, I
absolutely. So should we read through the names and people can just briefly say whether they support it or not?
Well, if people would like to testify on the ordinance, the substitute ordinance as it is, or the grant agreements that are part of 553, absolutely, we encourage okay. that testimony. And so, Carla, just go through them one at a time, and people either say, yeah, I'm interested, or they'll say, no, I'm not.
Okay. The next person.
There are 2 minutes.
Okay. Next person would be Jim McLaughlin.
Good afternoon. Understanding what the council has done today with the substitute amendment, my testimony today is not necessary. I provided each of your offices with a written copy of a testimony. It's in the record, and when we reconvene at a future time, we'll give it then. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate it.
Next is Aslan Newsom.
Yeah, I'm good for today. Thank you, though.
Thank you.
Blythe Olson.
Yes, I defer to Shannon on this, and I look forward to providing testimony in the context of her presentation in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Blythe. Appreciate it.
Marilee Carr.
Thank you. Thank you for your concern with Sweeney's lack of transparency. I agree with the amendment you passed. I have further information on Sweeney's resistance to equity mandates, but I can deliver that at another time.
Okay, thank you, Marilee. Appreciate it.
Sally Eck.
Hi there.
Hi, Sally.
Hi, I'm happy to share the next testimony. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Carol Porto.
Yes, Carol Porto, me too. I will testify at a different time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Carol.
Janet Coleman.
Yes, I am also willing to save my testimony for a future date.
Thank you, Janet.
Catherine Daly.
Yes, I will be available at a later date, and I yield my time.
Okay, thank you.
Danielle Barker.
Hi, Danielle.
I don't think Danielle is connected.
Yeah, I don't see Danielle. Do you see her, Carla?
I do not see her. Sorry about that. Let's go.
At the end, we'll get her.
Okay. Robert Lennox.
I too support the amendment, and I'm looking forward to testifying at a later date. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Marie Tyvol. Marie, sorry.
I don't see Marie, do you? I don't see her on the list. She may have already disconnected.
How about Diane Victoria? I'm not seeing her.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. There you go.
Great. Hi, Diane. I'm
happy to delay my testimony to another time.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Commissioner Udaly, do you have your hand raised or is that residual? Okay, very good.
Adam Lamont.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, for all that you do. I will delay my testimony until another time. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Adam.
Yeah. Shane Graff.
Yes, I've submitted my testimony. I live in Hillsdale. Both my kids went to Wilson High School, and you can read it at your convenience, and I will also submit it at a later time.
Thank you, Shane.
Chuck Stilson?
My name is Chuck Stilson, and I'm a resident of Hillsdale. I'm ceding my time to give testimony in order to play the video today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amelia Fowler?
That's it.
Is Amelia?
Yes. Hi, I'm here. Sorry. I am also a resident of Hillsdale. I agree with the amendment, and I just want to thank everyone that was here and gave their time to testify today, and I will also be available to testify at a later date.
Okay. Thank you, Amelia.
Melissa Kenny.
Yes.
Hi, Melissa.
Hello. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. I also will reserve my testimony for the scheduled later date and have submitted my testimony for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Terry Dublinsky.
Hi. I would like to testify because my testimony is actually just tertiary to Southwest.
All right. Hi, Terry. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I did prepare 3 minutes. I'll go as fast as I can and cut out the irrelevant stuff. Well, okay, it's not irrelevant. As co-chair of Southeast Uplift, I run up the ranks from the neighborhood, from North Tabor. And unlike the other coalition boards like Southwest, which only has code 3.96 required neighborhood reps, Southeast Uplift has an added 12 slots for groups and individuals representing identities not normally represented on boards. And through our executive committee and working with a highly diverse staff over the last couple of years, we increased representation of people of color and support development of the Portland United Against Hate. Concurrently, the executive committee spent a year educating the board on a range of diverse speakers on race and white privilege in preparation for discussion of code 3.96. But then there were summer elections, new people came in, we just started discussing code 3.96, and I was so offended by the discussions of some of the new members that I realized that the system was fundamentally broken. So this is my resignation letter. The reaction of Miguel's life experience as a person of color at the September board meeting was unacceptable. The symbolism of an established board member not even being at the table while sitting board members rolled their eyes and grumbled was racist. I'm embarrassed by the actions of the representative of my own neighborhood. This shows that spending a year discussing race with guest speakers and trainings was not successful because our code-defined board structure prevents us from having a role in who our members are. The white fragility on full display proved to me it is a fundamentally broken system. I began my public service in the early 90s fighting for gay rights at the height of the AIDS crisis. I've survived many difficult battles, but will no longer serve my energies trying to reform a broken system. So I thanked everybody. And since then, Southeast Uplift, I hope my resignation gave them a little bit more room. They just this week passed a amazingly robust diversity, equity, and inclusion statement in equity lens. But we must update, Udaly is right, we must update code 3.96 to bring other reps, organizations on par with the neighborhoods. This is, thank you. I appreciate the time. How did I do?
Thank you, Terry.
You did it on time as well, I believe.
14 seconds left.
Nice. With 14 seconds to spare, that's good. Thank you, Terry.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
And the last person I show is Deborah Colondi.
Hi there. I will defer my testimony for another time. I appreciate your decision-making today on the substitution. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll look forward to seeing you next time.
Great.
That's all we had registered, Mayor.
All right. Very good. Thank you, everyone, for accommodating those needs. And for us to hear what the folks have to say specifically. With that, Carla, we now have made both of these emergency ordinances, 552 and 553, correct?
Yes, we could. So we're using the same language for the emergency clause on both.
That is correct.
Okay.
And Lauren, do you have any problems with that?
I guess I understood the emergency clause to apply to the substitute ordinance, which was 552. So if you could just go ahead and amend 553 as well.
I'll entertain a motion on 553.
So moved.
We have a motion.
Second.
Motion from Commissioner Udaly, second from Commissioner, I believe that was Fritz.
Thank you.
On 552, Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz.
This is on the emergency, right? Adding the emergency?
No, we already added the emergency on 552 and 553, so now we're actually voting on the underlying ordinance.
Oh, I thought we had vote on that motion.
Oh, okay. You're right. I'm sorry. You know what? You guys are right. I'm wrong.
Again.
So
it wouldn't be. So this is on the emergency on 553. We're adding the emergency clause on 553. Sorry.
And our other two colleagues have already voted, and I think that after so many months, I'm finally getting better at being quicker about saying second, even over the telephone. So thank you very much. I'm glad that we were able to get the consensus on this. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. So now we go back to the ordinances as amended with their emergency clauses in all of their glory. Please call the roll on 552.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly?
I'm going to save my remarks for the second vote. I vote aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate all the council officers working together to be able to find a resolution in a very fast time frame since we became aware of the challenges. So thank you to each of my colleagues for this. And I also am happy to view the testimony of the folks who chose to defer today.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. To 553 is amended. Please call the roll.
I'm sorry. Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
I'm getting confused here. So I want to thank Director Ree, Shuk Arifjanov, and Andrea Williams from Civic Life, and my senior policy advisor, Hannah Holloway, for their work on these items. I also want to thank my colleagues for working with my office to reach an amenable agreement that we could all support today. Thank you to all the organizations that received funding today for your partnership with the city and your dedication to our community. I regret that we can't give you more financial certainty until the fall bump, but the good news is the council passed its recovery resolution, which outlines how BIPOC, immigrant, and other communities most impacted by COVID will be central to how the city prioritizes and funds our recovery work. I expect this will also inform how council addresses the inevitable budget cuts this fall and how we distribute the impacts of those cuts across our services and community. We need to do more work to ensure that we're investing in organizations that reflect our values and priorities as a city and are committed to the needs of our least well-served populations. But I'm pleased with the step we're taking here today. I vote aye.
Fritz?
I'm really glad to see that the diverse civic leadership organizations are getting the same level of funding as last year, compared with the cut that was made to the district coalitions. As Linda Nesakovin pointed out, throughout the recession, we had conversations and everybody agreed to hold the diverse civic leadership organizations harmless. So I'm glad to see that that's being continued. And I'm also glad that we're able to add the emergency clauses, because particularly for Momentum Alliance, which was our most recently funded group, the funding that they get from Civic Life is 25% of their budget. So it's really important that we get that money to them. And I've been really excited. When we did the request for proposals to see which group would be added to the previous five, they kind of came out of nowhere. And I was really excited to learn about their organization. And I'm very pleased with the work that they're doing. Of course, I'm pleased with the work that the other organizations are doing as well. I just wanted to give them a shout out. And I'm happy to vote aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye.
Oh, one more thing. One more thing. I'm so sorry. I forgot to thank Claire Adamsick, who has been doing absolutely amazing work while being at the Emergency Communication Center. So I would not be able to sleep tonight if I hadn't been able to get that in. Sorry to interrupt, Mayor.
Not at all. I want you to be able to get the sleep you so richly deserve. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted as amended. And that completes our business for this afternoon session. We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.